Hello, and welcome to this bonus episode of the Giants of the Faith podcast. This is the show where we look at Christians from the last 2,000 years that have made an impact for the kingdom of God. I try to bring a mix and balance of folks from across the ages and from various locales, and maybe with some different theological perspectives. And I have a big and a growing list of Christians in my database, but I'm always looking for more. So if you have any suggestions for folks you'd like to see covered in an episode, please send me an email at podcast@giantsofthefaith.com. My list is real weak on Africans, Asians, and South and Central Americans, so any suggestions from those areas are going to move toward the top of the list. I appreciate your support very much. In today's episode, we're looking at influential modern theologian Karl Barth. Now, this is my third try at writing this episode, because I struggled to be able to present Barth in a way that both appreciates his impact on the 20th century church and the conservative pushback against liberalism, while also dealing with the problems in his personal life that make him such a polarizing figure. So, to avoid rubber stamping Barth's status as a giant of the faith, but to also cover such an influential figure, I'm bumping him to bonus episode status. Now, I understand that might limit the reach of this episode, but at least it'll soothe my conscience. Karl Barth was born on May 10th, 1886, in Basel, Switzerland. He came from a family with a strong Christian tradition. His father, Fritz, was a Swiss Reformed minister, and his mother, Anna Katharina, came from a family of theologians. His upbringing was deeply influenced by his parents' commitment to the Reformed faith. Barth had one younger sister, Katharina, but I couldn't find anything out about her beyond just her name. Well, despite this upbringing, Barth was a wild child. He despised school, and he wandered the streets of Bern, his hometown. He became involved in a street gang, and eventually he rose through the ranks to become its leader. He was known to stir up trouble in the neighborhood and to fight and feud with rival gangs. But he did grow out of this period of his life, and in 1904 he was set to follow in his father's footsteps toward ministry. Barth studied theology at the University of Bern, where he was initially influenced by the liberal theology prevalent at the time. After Bern, he attended the University of Berlin, where he encountered the works of theologians like Friedrich Schleiermacher and Søren Kierkegaard. These encounters played a crucial role in shaping Barth's theological development. Now, before we move on with Barth's story, let's take a minute to look at what was meant by liberal theology. So liberal theology in the early 20th century was a movement that sought to reconcile Christian beliefs with modern intellectual and cultural development. It emerged in response to the challenges posed by scientific discoveries, historical criticism of the Bible, and philosophical shifts such as the moves toward rationalism and empiricism. Liberal theologians tended to prioritize reason and human experience over traditional dogma and supernaturalism. They sought to reinterpret Christian doctrines in light of modern knowledge and philosophical insights. So when we say the historical criticism of the Bible, what we're talking about is scholarly analysis to the Bible in order to understand its historical context, literary genres, and authorial intent. Now, this approach often led to questioning the literal truth of certain Bible accounts and doctrines. Along with this, liberal theologians tended to downplay or reinterpret traditional Christian doctrines, such as the virgin birth, miracles, and even the bodily resurrection of Jesus. Instead, they focused on the ethical and moral teachings of Jesus and the universal principles of love and justice. This emphasis led to advocacy for social reforms, things like workers' rights, women's suffrage, and racial equality. And the problem here, of course, is that the purpose and the direction of the church shifted away from a focus on the gospel to an emphasis on worldly good. And as the world's definition of good shifts farther and farther from a biblical definition, so must the churches. And that's what we see in today's mainline denominations that barely even claim the Christian mantle. Liberal theologians often held an optimistic view of human progress and believed that society could achieve moral and spiritual improvement through education, social reform, and the application of Christian principles. Unfortunately, this is to be accomplished by making Christianity more palatable to modern culture by downplaying the supernatural elements. All right, so back to Barth. After completing his studies, he served as a pastor in Geneva from 1909 to 1911, and then in the small Swiss village of Saffenville from 1911 to 1921. During this time, he became increasingly disillusioned with the liberal theology of the day, which he saw as compromising the integrity of the Christian faith. This dissatisfaction with liberal theology would later become a central theme in his own theological writings. In 1913, Barth met and married Nellie Hoffman in his Geneva church. The couple went on to have 5 children, 4 sons, 1 daughter. But the marriage was not a happy one, and Barth's treatment of his wife was bluntly despicable. Put simply, Barth was a long-time adulterer who treated his wife shamefully. He was a long-term, unrepentant sinner. And we'll deal with his infidelity, and then we'll return to the overall story of his life. In 1924, 24-year-old Charlotte von Kirchbaum attended a Barth lecture. As she'd been introduced to Barth's writings by her pastor, a fellow named George Mertz, who also happened to be the godfather of one of Barth's sons. Mertz had encouraged Charlotte in her theological education, and she was an avid follower of Barth's every move, as reported in the newspapers at least, and it was Mertz that took Charlotte to meet Barth in person. Barth was impressed by Charlotte, and he invited her to come to his summer mountain retreat with other members of his inner circle. In late 1925, Barth moved to Munster to take a teaching appointment, and his wife and family stayed behind until a home was found for them. Unfortunately, in February 1926, Charlotte visited Barth in Munster and was his companion from then on. She began to proof and edit his writings, and she acted as his secretary. In 1929, Barth and Kirchbaum spent the summer together in the Alps. Now, when summer was over, Barth announced to his family that his mistress was moving into the family home. Now, you can imagine what this did to Barth's wife, Nellie. At one point, she put an ultimatum to Barth. Either Charlotte would go, or Nellie would sue for divorce. Now, Barth considered this, then he called a meeting between himself, Nellie, and Charlotte. And again, he chose his mistress over his family, and Charlotte stayed. And Nellie never did sue for divorce, but you can imagine what the home was like. Now, this relationship continued for many years until Barth's death, and Kirchbaum lived in the Barth household until 1966, 2 years before Barth died. At that point, she'd become ill and had to be moved to a nursing home, where she lived until 1975. And in 2017, the Barth family released years of letters exchanged between Barth and Kirchbaum, exposing the depths of the affair, the long-term extramarital affair, and the treatment of his wife and family really stains Barth's reputation and makes it difficult, at least for me, to hold him in high regard. Okay, so jumping back to the main narrative. The outbreak of World War I in 1914 had a profound impact on Barth. Like many of his contemporaries, he initially supported the war effort, but he soon became disillusioned with the nationalist fervor and the complicity of the church in supporting the war in Germany. His experience with World War I deepened Barth's convictions that Christianity must offer a prophetic critique of culture and politics. During his pastoral ministry in Saffenville, Barth became increasingly disillusioned with the liberal theology prevalent in the Protestant churches at the time. After the war, Barth began his academic career as a professor of theology in Göttingen, Germany. He later held teaching positions at the University of Munster and the University of Bonn. Now, throughout his career, Barth remained committed to the task of rethinking Christian theology in light of the challenges of the modern world, but without abandoning the core of the faith. Now, Barth's commentary on Romans was a direct response to the liberal theology that dominated Protestant theology in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Barth argued for a radical reorientation of Christian theology around the sovereignty of God and the absolute transcendence of divine revelation. His commentary on Romans introduced the theological method known as dialectical theology, which emphasized the radical otherness of God and the paradoxical nature of divine revelation. According to Barth, God's revelation in Jesus Christ transcends human understanding and disrupts all human attempts to domesticate or to control it. This approach challenged the rationalism of liberal theology and called for a renewed emphasis on the sovereignty and mystery of God. He also explored a wide range of theological themes, including sin and grace, faith and works, law and gospel, and the relationship between the Jew and the Gentile in the plan of salvation. He argued that the central message of Romans is the unconditional grace of God revealed in Jesus Christ, which calls forth a response of faith and obedience from believers. His work had a profound impact on the course of the 20th century theology, inspiring a generation of theologians to rethink their assumptions about the nature of God, revelation, and salvation. It sparked a revolution that came to be known as Neo-Orthodoxy. Though Barth himself rejected the term, which sought to reassert the transcendent and mysterious dimensions of the Christian faith in response to the challenges of modern life. It continues to be studied and debated by theologians and scholars around the world today. As Europe recovered from the Great War, Barth was an outspoken critic of Nazism in Germany and of the German Christian movement, which sought to align Christianity with Nazi ideology. He opposed the Nazification of the German Protestant Church, and he was involved in the drafting of the Barmen Declaration in 1934, which affirmed the independence of the church from the state and rejected Nazi attempts to impose their own theology. Despite growing political pressure, Barth continued to teach and lecture in Germany during the interwar period. His lectures drew large crowds and influenced many students who would go on to become theologians themselves. However, his refusal to align with Nazi ideology eventually led to his dismissal from his position at the University of Bonn in 1935, and he was forced to leave Germany, and he took up a position as professor of theology at the University of Basel in Switzerland. Now, this period of exile allowed him to continue his theological work in a more hospitable environment, and he remained in Switzerland for the rest of his life, though he continued to engage with theological and political developments both in Germany and beyond. Following the devastation of World War II, Barth focused on the reconstruction of theology in the context of a world deeply affected by violence, suffering, and moral ambiguity. He sought to address the theological implications of the war and the challenges that it posed to Christian faith. His major work, Church Dogmatics, was published in multiple volumes between 1932 and 1967. After World War II, Barth continued to work on this monumental project, refining and expanding his theological system. Church Dogmatics remains one of the most influential theological works of the 20th century, exploring themes like the nature of God, revelation, and the relationship between God and humanity. Barth remained actively engaged in ecumenical dialogue and efforts for Christian unity after World War II. He participated in various ecumenical conferences and meetings, advocating for greater cooperation and understanding among Christian denominations. His theology played a significant role in shaping these ecumenical discussions and agreements, particularly in the context of the World Council of Churches. He continued to offer sharp critiques of political ideologies and systems that he saw as incompatible with the Christian faith. He spoke out against the Cold War arms race, nuclear proliferation, and the threat of totalitarianism. His theological emphasis on the sovereignty of God and the priority of ethical responsibility led him to challenge both capitalist and communist ideologies. In his later years, Barth continued to write essays, deliver lectures, and engage in theological debates. He addressed contemporary issues such as the relationship between theology and science, the role of church in society, and the challenges of modernity. His later writings reflect his ongoing commitment to theological inquiry and his concern for the relevance of Christian faith in a rapidly changing world. His legacy continued to grow after his death in 1968. His writings have been widely studied and debated by theologians of all denominations, and his ideas have influenced generations of Christian thinkers. Barth's emphasis on the sovereignty of God, the centrality of Christ, and the importance of Scripture continues to shape theological discourse in the 21st century. Now, unfortunately, his life was also characterized by a great unrepentant sin that must impact his legacy. He did great work for the kingdom, but he was ultimately an extremely flawed man. Well, thanks very much for listening to this bonus episode. Until next time, God bless.